Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Monday. Thanks for being with us. Good to be back in the saddle. You've been to Lake Powell? Maybe just thrown a fishing line out. One doesn't work. Eric can't find me. Actually, I found Eric, and he was about hung up on me. I sent Jordan a text. I got a shoe fly from Jordan, which is our code here for go away. I'm on vacation, or you're on vacation. I went to Lake Powell and caught a bunch of bass and toured around. It was fun. Camped on the ground. Grew a beard. Cleaned up. It was kind of hard to come back to it today. Not really. I love doing this. Played some golf and just had a good break. And today, we wake up and Arizona State gets a commitment. How about that? They get a quarterback. So we're going to talk about that with Chris Cartman on today's show. I did get caught up on the sports end of things from the weekend. Watched the finals last night. I have some thoughts on that here shortly. I have to tell you, on a personal side, I've been fascinated, unfortunately, by the three homicides. They're right near our studio and right around Shea and Scottsdale of what has been going on here with this the paralegals, and it's the story that everyone is talking about, and it's frightening, it's crushing. It's someone that many of my friends in the media space have worked with. My buddy Mike Watkus over at Channel 3 was just devastated. Dan Barr, great attorney here in town, just beyond belief as to what's happened. So that is going on even as we speak. They're surrounding the hotel where this guy is, right near us. So it's really interesting. The Diamondbacks had what I consider to be an expected week, but now things get very interesting for them. And we're not just going to go off the grid on them because it's June and they didn't play well in May. If you wake up today, they're still in first place. Okay, so it's the ebbs and flows. Or maybe the National League West just isn't that good. But let's get started. Thoughts right off the top here, brought to you by Sagicor Now. Guys, you got to protect what matters most. And if you've not checked in on your life insurance, if you've never considered life insurance, what if something were to happen to you, those that are around you, they would be left, okay? And do you want to protect them? Do so by logging on and getting your free quote online at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Log on and check it out. Is it just me or the Warriors a team that just looks like they're bored with all this? This is not going to be Warriors bashing. I've seen some of that, read some of that nationally. I thought last night, just hearing Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson, it sounded like two guys that were, Warriors are going to win. And of course, Mike Breen is the ultimate pitch man. He's the ultimate salesman. He's P.T. Barnum. He's paid by the league and ABC. So everything that they do has got to be the greatest and most spectacular thing for Mike Breen. Give me Marv Albert any day. But as I'm watching the finals last night, it just felt like even the arena, when you've got a resort to, and I'll give the fans at Golden State a lot of credit, when they chanted MVP to J.R. Smith, that is one of the best that I've ever seen. That is just one of the absolute class moments of a home court team, home court fans that get it. They're not there looking on their phones. No, they're completely, totally into the game. They know J.R. Smith screwed up, crapped the bed the other night, whatever term you want to use. And so they got after him. I thought that was beautiful. When you're chanting MVP at a guy like that, look, meltdowns have happened before in the NBA. They've happened before. Magic Johnson had a famous meltdown. This was Magic Johnson back against the Boston Celtics where he dribbled out a clock. He didn't know the situation. And they ended up not winning the series the Lakers did against the Boston Celtics. This is not the first time that something like this has happened. But it's J.R. Smith. It's not Magic Johnson. And we're also in a day and age of social media where J.R. Smith is just going to get crushed for years to come. Somebody's probably going to offer him season tickets or invite him to the ring ceremony. I don't know. When I'm watching the Warriors and it's Steph Curry dropping back, falling away, and hitting a three, there's nothing that you can do defensively in that. When I'm watching Klay Thompson on half a leg, it looked like he's gimping around out on the floor, and he's still able to find ways to contribute and give 20 points. yeah, Golden State is loaded. Golden State is stacked. Draymond Green is the sandpaper on that team. Every team, every championship team has to have a sandpaper guy or two. When Charles was here, he was sandpaper guy. When Curt Schilling was on the Diamondbacks, he was sandpaper guy. You've got to have guys that aren't all alike and all everything is great and everything is so sweet and everything is so lovable. Like Steph Curry, I don't think he could be that guy. Klay Thompson certainly isn't that guy. Andre Iguodala is not that guy. But Draymond Green is certainly that guy. Kevin Durant's not that guy. JaVale McGee. So as I'm watching the Warriors, they do have the personality of their coach. They do look like a team that is aging right before us. Let's not forget, this is a group of players that has been playing into June each of the last 4 years. It's not like Devin Booker, who is sitting there and he's done by mid-April, and he's not logging another 6 weeks of very hard action on his body. If you don't think that playoff basketball doesn't take its toll, look at LeBron James. LeBron James, to me, looked worn out, and he's still putting up terrific numbers last night. So it's interesting in that, am I tired of seeing Warriors, Cavs? Sure I am. Do I look at greatness in sports? Absolutely I do. So I have to take in the Warriors with a piece of that. I'm certainly not taking in the Cavaliers as greatness. I'm only looking at LeBron as greatness. And Kevin Love was pretty good, but aside from Kevin Love, give me anybody out of the Kyle Korver. He had 1 point last night. Tristan Thompson, come on.
Did you happen to see what the spread was last night?
I didn't.
Golden State -11.5.
Mm.
It's the NBA Finals.
Mm.
No NBA Finals should be double-digit spread.
Yeah. That's
but
true.
That's the reality that we live in, and when Golden State has a super team, you're probably going to get double-digit spreads.
Are you sick of this?
No.
Did you find last night interesting and fascinating?
No, because I knew how that movie was going to end. I knew that it was just going to be a blowout because the Cavs had their chance in game one, and everything went right for the Cavs in game one until the very end of regulation. And I knew right when it went in overtime, they weren't going to win. And I knew going into last night's game, they had no chance. And I give them a...
They're going to win a game at home.
I would think so. I give them like a 35% chance of winning game three. But the way it works, Brad, at least for me visually, everything has to fall in line perfectly for the Cavs to even have a chance to win a single game in this series. Because they're not going to win the series. That's pretty evident.
But LeBron is sitting there. They're rolling out lineups that you just look at and say, okay, where is the offense exactly going to come from this? George Hill played really – I got the Suns on my head. George Hill, I thought, played pretty well for them last
night. Very well.
But outside of that, I mean, come on. There wasn't anybody that I looked at and said, this is going to put the fear in God. If I'm in the Golden State locker room, I don't see where there's any fear at all. If I'm Steve Kerr, yeah, I've sat on JaVale McGee. I haven't used JaVale McGee. I'm going to use JaVale McGee. I'm going to put Jordan Bell in the game, and he's going to get into LeBron. And Andre Iguodala is going to get all over me for getting retaliating towards LeBron. Steve Kerr just...
But Iguodala doesn't even have to play.
No.
And they're winning. I mean, they won last night handily. So,
and Klay Thompson's not 100%. And you know, I watched Durant do things, and he's so much fun to watch
he
at
is.
That stage. You know, he's up. He's on the biggest stage. He's 6'11". He's between the legs, behind the back. Good dribble, pull up, hit a three,
and
go the other way before it even hits the net.
I was talking with some friends. I don't think we're ever going to see another Kevin Durant. I don't think we'll ever see someone that's that tall and that skilled.
Sure we will.
And that great of a shooter.
Because now kids have something to look at. Sure we will. I don't think so.
No.
It's like saying there will never be another Michael Jordan. Well, Kobe Bryant. Well, LeBron James. I don't know if we'll see another LeBron James because of the body size of him. And he's 33,
but he still hasn't broken down. But you can say the same thing about Durant, Brad. I mean, he is a two playing in a center's body. And doing things out on the court. I mean, I guess you could say Porzingis is like a poor man's Kevin Durant.
Okay, Lauri Markkanen was a poor, poor man's, but he was still, is still 6'11".
But athletically, still out on the wing. But athletically, it's not even close.
No, it's not even close.
I mean,
my point is, yes, you're right. You're right. But to think that another 6'11 kid isn't going to come along, we're in a day now where there's lots of 6'11 kids that are seeing this. And they're saying, I want to be like him. Trust me on this. When I go to club basketball stuff, as nauseating as it can be, when you see a 6'10 kid and he's actually being coached the right way, which doesn't happen often in club. Club is, well, we got to win games. My kid's got to play and that's it. No, if you're on the right club, it's we're going to try to develop you. And I will see a kid who's 6'8", 6'9", who's out on a wing, and they may be losing by 20. Doesn't mean a darn thing. They're at least giving him the opportunity. There are some that are out there. I don't know if there'll ever be another skilled big man like Durant. You're right in that regard.
And he has such great court savvy. He knows how to expose mismatches.
He never loses his temper either.
No, he knows when he's guarded by 6'2 George Hill, what does he do? He goes down on the block.
Sure.
Because he's smart. He takes advantage of mismatches much like LeBron does.
Okay, so if you're LeBron, the whole idea of him staying. Like last night, I saw where Brian Windhorst started to weigh in on his future, on LeBron's future. And Brian would know. We've had Brian on the show before. Brian weighed in that CJ McCollum and Portland's third pick in the draft could be in play to try to get more help for LeBron to stay in Cleveland. Okay. If LeBron James decides that he's going to go to Houston, that was out there last night.
That makes sense.
So if he goes to Houston, if LeBron says, I'm going to go play with Chris Paul and James Harden down in Houston, because I simply don't have enough talent here in Cleveland. I've done this thing in Cleveland. Is that the direction that they go? Got much more on this to get to. On the other side, though, some Diamondbacks, things from the weekend. And, you know, all of a sudden they're not dead and they played a very, very soft part of their schedule. We'll get into that. But this week ahead, really interesting. That's straight ahead. And today's baseball draft, too. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, now to the Diamondbacks. So the MLB draft is tonight. They are picking 25th. What does that mean? It means they are not going to land two of the top players who are right here in the Valley. And there'll be much more on that up on the website that you can check out. On the MLB draft tonight, Detroit has a number one overall pick, in case you're curious. In terms of the Diamondbacks, so here we are in the early part of June, and after everything that went wrong, as bad as they played, and they were horrific, they were terrible in the month of May. There's no other way to put it. They were just awful. They have a game and a half lead today over the Giants, and they're 2.5 up on Colorado. Well, guess what? This week they play the Giants starting tonight in San Francisco and Colorado this weekend in Denver. And so I'm very pleased by this, that they've been able to weather the storm. David Peralta has been absolutely lights out. David Peralta's hit a home run in three straight games. He's been a player that has not done a whole lot in terms of consistency this season. It had been the A.J. Pollock show until Pollock went down with an injury. Now Peralta's come in, he's been lights out. Now, in fairness, it's Miami, okay, and it's Cincinnati. It's two of the worst teams and probably the two worst teams in all of Major League Baseball. And so when we said this a couple weeks ago that let's just breathe a little bit, there's no reason to go out and do anything rash at the third week of May around a team that's in a slump. It's just the slump that they went through was so painful. I don't know if they're through it or not. They went 5-1 in the last week. The Reds threw the ball all around the field. They weren't good at all. Miami wasn't good. Every game felt like it was a blowout by the time you get to the third, fourth inning. I wasn't watching by then. And so they have a good homestand, and they're in first place, even though they went through 5 weeks of bad baseball. Buchholz has been a very good acquisition. Clay Buchholz has done a nice job. I like it when he's on the mound. I like watching him better than I like watching Zach Godley. Zach Godley is pitching tonight, and Zach Godley, to me, has been hit and miss. There's kind of this Armando Reynoso feel about Zach Godley. You're going to get 5 1/3. You're going to get 3 walks. You're going to get 4 strikeouts, or vice versa. And I feel as though that when he's on the mound, it just gets me nervous. It's like Greinke. Greinke's going to go 6 or 7 maybe. And you have $33 million tied up in Greinke. That drives me crazy. But they're in first place. So, you know, you look at the Dodgers, they bench Cody Bellinger 2 games in a row. Cody Bellinger's striking out 35% of the time this season. He's been to the point where people are asking Dave Roberts, are you considering sending him down to the farm to get it figured out? He's been that bad for the Dodgers. And yet the Dodgers aren't out of the race. If you look at the National League West, maybe it is the National League worst. Maybe it is, because there's a real logjam at the top of the division. Fortunately, the Diamondbacks are sitting there at the top of the division as it stands right now. Cook was good again yesterday, 7 scoreless innings. I know that we're very fickle here in Arizona. I know we're very fickle when it comes to the baseball team, that it's hard for people to understand a team will lose 8 of 10 or 10 of 12. I was finding it unacceptable to watch them have the absolute free fall like they had in the month of May. But they've come out of it, and they've come out of it in first place in the division. So how do they do this week? It's a measuring stick week. There's a few of those during the course of the season. Yeah, they're not going to lose the division here in the early part of June. It's 6 games against the Giants and 6 games against Colorado. But those are the two teams that are right on your heels. If you've truly come out of this after winning 5 of 6 against 2 bad teams, then go out on the road and take 4 of 6 or 5 of 6. If you even go 500, I suppose that's fine. But I'd like to see a 4-2 road trip here. I would take that for sure. It's been a big day for Arizona State football, and we're only at 10:30 in the morning. We'll explain why on the other side with Chris Cartman. That's after this timeout. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now Chris Cartman, SunDevilSource.com publisher, good friend of the show, coming on board. A lot to get to. I have not seen you in a while. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Brad?
I'm good. I'm refreshed from fishing, so I'm ready to go. The opener against UTSA, I think we're like less than 100 days away, right, Chris? Start of the season?
Yes, we are.
So UTSA, Michigan State, San Diego State, Washington, that is September. What, in your view, will ASU's record be at the end of September?
Wow, you're putting me on the spot like that. I would say probably 2-2. Is my guess.
And the two being UTSA.
Yeah, UTSA and San Diego State are the most likely wins.
I kind of feel like this Michigan State game, you know, they got crushed last year in 2 games, like 30-point loss crushes. I know everybody's got them ranked in the top 10. And I saw it's a 7:45 kick, right? So you're not going to have the heat on the side. I kind of feel like that's one of those maybe trap game type deals for Michigan State. I don't know. Am I being too maroon and gold here? I don't know. What do you think? That's blowout city?
I don't think so. There's a history, Brad, to your point. There's a history of teams struggling from the East or Central time zones when they have to travel back to the West and then play, especially like in night games. So I think that you might be onto something there. It's just that they're such a well-functioning and executing type of a team, and they have a very, very good defense schematically, that those things are going to make it tough for a program that's really only going to get indoctrinated to that type of a thing with what Herm Edwards is trying to incorporate.
Talking with Chris Cartman, SunDevilSource.com. So Arizona State gets Ethan Long, 2019 quarterback recruit. They get somebody in the 2019 class. He is a quarterback. What is Arizona State getting in this commitment?
Yeah, I was just actually talking to him 20 minutes ago, probably. His very interesting story as far as how his recruitment unfolded. He reached out to ASU a couple weeks before the Elite 11 qualifier regional in May 12th in Las Vegas. Nothing really happened at that point in terms of the recruitment, but then he put up this huge Nike Plus rating of 117, which is as good as any quarterback in the country. He had a 4.6 something 40, a 4.10 shuttle, a phenomenal powerball 40, and then he had a 35-inch vertical jump. Almost all those are 98 percentile or better. And then ASU, they've been kind of scouring the country. Rob Likens has been from Florida to California, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, looking at quarterbacks in the spring, and it's a bad class nationally. They looked at the local guys, Spencer Brash. They looked at Slovis at Desert Mountain, and they decided they were going to go up to Oregon and take a look at what Long had to offer. He had no other Power 5 offers as a quarterback, but he's such a great athlete. He had been offered by Utah as a linebacker. But so Likens goes up there, and he falls in love with the kid. He has a 4.0 GPA. He's got great leadership and intangible skills. He's 210 pounds. He was a sixth place wrestler in the state as a sophomore before he gave it up to focus entirely on football. He's a great athlete who also has a good arm. I mean, he has an arm that's probably better than Taylor Kelly, for example, at the same stage, in a same height, bigger body type of a kid. And they fell in love with him, really. So they decided to trip him this past weekend. He's the first official visitor as a quarterback. He said that ASU has been his dream school since he was a kid. He's got grandparents that live in Scottsdale for like 40 or 50 years. He spent some time here. His brother plays at NAU. So he knew going into the visit he was going to commit.
Does it concern you, we're talking with Chris Cartman, does it concern you that they did not get a sniff from any of the in-state quarterbacks this year? Rattler was going to Oklahoma. Gunnar Cruz commits to Washington State. Conover goes to BYU. Brash, I mean, you go right down the list. Does it concern you as a follower, as a close observer as you are of the program, that they didn't get a sniff from any of the in-state quarterbacks?
I'm glad that you asked that. So let's go over this, right? So Spencer Rattler, maybe the number one quarterback in the country. He's definitely up there. ASU's been trying to recruit him since he was a freshman, but you go through three different coordinators and the writing is on the wall. You're not going to get without any sort of stability and better records on the field, you're not going to get that type of quarterback, right? Jacob Conover, I think ASU did a good job despite having to navigate the coaching transition from Napier, who didn't like Conover enough to offer him, to Rob Likens, where Likens really did like Conover and wanted to get him. I think that the LDS pull was too strong there, especially with his decision to go on a mission. That's basically what he told me. Then you look at the other quarterbacks in the state. ASU watched them really carefully, contrasting what happened with Conover, the previous staff with Billy Napier. He really liked Gunnar Cruz, and they offered him after passing league at ASU a year ago, exactly. And then, but the current staff, Rob Likens, came in. The way that they run their offense, it's a lot of naked bootlegs and things that move the quarterback out of the pocket, and that's not really Cruz's strength. And so they decided that they weren't going to continue to recruit Cruz, which he, essentially told me as well a couple weeks ago. So it's not really a surprise to see Cruz go to an air raid style scheme where you have a landlocked quarterback in the pocket. And then the other quarterbacks in the state that we mentioned there, Brash,
Slovis. Yeah.
The ASU didn't offer them either. And ASU went to spring ball and looked at both of those guys really, really carefully.
Okay, and then you look a year from now, Jack Miller over at Chaparral, who's blown up nationally. They have a shot there. I get fans that ask me on that one.
He's phenomenal. I just saw him on Friday night at passing league at ASU. He was exceptional. The best I've seen in that type of a setting since probably Kyle Allen, who was really great in that type of an environment. Mm-hmm. NFL upside guy all the way. I don't think ASU's got a strong chance because quarterback recruiting is so expedited nowadays that even before this staff was in place, he was getting recruited by the Alabamas and the Michigans of the world. And ASU's probably going to have to show more on the field with Rob Likens and this offense before quarterbacks of that sort of caliber are willing to consider going to ASU.
Talking with Chris Cartman, SunDevilSource.com. Great content there. You can check it out. If you could give the fans behind the scenes, pull the curtain back. I know Eric and Jordan were there as well with you on Friday for the Al Luganville media session, the kind of the command center. But paint a picture for the fans, what Al's hiring. I've known Al forever. I covered him in San Diego when he was the coach of the Aztecs. We had Marshall Faulk and Darnay Scott. But he's come in here. This actually was a move that was made quite some time back. They just released it. They have this command center deal with him for recruiting. What's it all about? Paint the fans a picture.
Okay, so look, if you go back and you look at the best ASU teams in the Pac-10, Pac-12 era, obviously it's the two Rose Bowl teams. And both of those teams were littered with Arizona kids and California kids. They were their best players, by and large, with a few exceptions. Okay, more recently, Todd Graham got away from that. His staff was not really built to be deeply embedded in California, and he was a little bit ambivalent to it, especially at the end. They had the famously that class that, or infamously, I should say, they had the class where they signed no high school kids from California, an unprecedented development, and one that Ray Anderson noted in his press conference announcing the decision to go in a different direction with the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. So what we have here is Al Luganbill, a guy who understands all of this stuff. He has the market-specific knowledge of ASU. He arrived on the job under Frank Cush in 1979, and then he proceeded to work at ASU through 1984. So his understanding of this is what informs his perspective that if ASU is doing what it should be doing, about 80% of its kids should be from Arizona and California. Okay. Now, at the same time, he candidly acknowledges they're behind in 2019 recruiting because they arrive. It's the first year where there's two signing dates. They have to scramble in January to sign a class, and then after that, they can really turn their efforts to 2019. While a lot of these other schools in the Pac-12, they either have better cachet or they've been recruiting those exact same kids for a year or longer, and that matters a lot to kids. No matter what anybody says, longevity, the established relationships, those things are hard to overcome. So ASU they've offered a huge number of 2020 and 2021 kids in California. And even in Arizona, they've offered a lot already. They're selling a narrative. Okay, 2019, we're going to take kids that we think from an evaluation standpoint are being under-recruited. They're going to develop for us. That's probably going to take a couple years, but they're going to have the height, the frames, the speed, and we're going to build the size onto their bodies. That's going to take a few years, but we're going to get better impact players in 2020 and 21. And so the narrative here, ASU fans need to prepare for this, okay? Because when you look at the team side of it, they're going to lose Manny Wilkins after this year, probably N'Keal Harry. They're going to, their offensive line is top heavy in terms of seniority, and they're going to lose some of those guys. Then they're going to have to start over again in some respects in 2019 with their personnel. So what they're selling is a narrative that this is going to take a few years. You're going to have to trust the process. It's an overused term in sports, but we're going to get back to doing the things that have been demonstrated to working at a high level at ASU in the past.
And, and Al, of course, his son is Tommy, and Tommy's tied in on a lot of fronts and is a great analyst on the broadcast end, which I think helps. I'm curious, Chris, from the standpoint of where Herm is now, from when he took over, from what you're seeing in all facets, where's the program at? Or is it simply, Brad, we're going to have no idea until they get through a few of these games if this team's going to be any good or not and what the future holds? What's your view?
Yeah, there's definitely things that are unknowns that are hugely significant. So that, to me, is what is Rob Blyken's offense going to look like? He doesn't have that established experience at a high level succeeding in a major conference in that type of a capacity. And they have the talent. They have enough talent where they should be like a top half offense in the Pac-12. I need to see that demonstrated this year. Mm-hmm. It can't be wait until 2019 with their offense, right? But then in other areas, it's going to be a longer evaluation process in terms of, are they adding the right types of kids? Does Herm Edwards have the momentum and energy to push through? Does he have the curiosity to learn a lot of the things that he doesn't know from being away from the college game for three decades? And how does that all kind of mesh? What's happening in their recruiting department? Is it getting staffed up the way that it needs to compete with the other programs around the country? These are all things that are going to take a lot more time to really get a firm handle on, probably at least a year, I would say. Mm-hmm. Just knowing the way that some of these problems are, with in-state recruiting and outreach and how responsive people are and all that stuff. But I would say that's a positive sign, actually. Herm Edwards, he really zeroed in on something that I think is important that Frank Cush told me previously and other coaches that I consider to be really great, which is the ability to connect with, relate to, and understand how to motivate different personality types on your team. So the idea that my office is always open and you should be coming in regularly, but if you get called into my office, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And Herm Edwards, while not a known for to be a strategist or a schemer because he wasn't a coordinator, where he is good is relationship development with players, getting them to buy in, and trying to extract the most that he can out of those guys. I think in that area, he has a chance to do well, and that ultimately is one of the most important things in the college football program.
Correct me if I'm wrong, I'll let you go off this, but he has not had many players dive out of the program. I mean, Blake Barnett is a mercenary. He's just quarterback looking to play, but you know where I'm going with this. Usually a new coach comes in, new voice comes in, and you'll see, half dozen guys get whacked. I'm not there every day. You are. Have you seen a mass exodus? And I'm just not aware of it.
Well, there's actually four or five players, but it was guys that they decided they were just going to honestly, say, look, you don't have a future here. Right. It wasn't like players that were going to be in the 2D for them in any kind of a way. And that's just part of the natural process of reinvigorating your roster. Mm-hmm. A lot of times what happens though, Brad, to this point, which is a good question, is it's the year after that first season where you then see some people question the path that they're on. So I think that's another thing that we're going to have to revisit when we talk about the program, maybe in like December or January.
Because I see he's doing the media circle of the 4:30 a.m. workout, and the local TVs are going out and covering that, and that's all well and good. But where is he at in terms of connecting with his players? It's kind of where I'm at on this whole deal. And a guy like Manny in particular, this is Manny's biggest year, and the rap on Manny is he hasn't won us any games, he hasn't lost us any games. I've heard that from all around the building. So is he in that space to finally do something this year, to put the focus
Manny's
on?
Manny's been really hamstrung. If we're just being really honest about this, he's had four coordinators in 4 years. Mm-hmm. And the offenses have been different. So he's having to constantly adjust and adapt. And let's keep in mind, ASU's defense was the worst in the country for a two-year period with passing defense. So their only ability was to win in ways that their offense wasn't really designed to win, and yet they couldn't that way. So I understand quarterback, that's everything gets put on a quarterback, but I think he actually had a really good season last year, and I think that what he says about the relationship component with Likens and with Herm Edwards has actually been really good, and that's sort of been, to my ear, what most of the kids have said is that actually they really like them. And that's easy to say when you haven't lost games, of course. I think that that's actually that's not the area where if they have problems, it's going to be in that area. It's going to be more schematic execution, player acquisition, and do they have enough juice behind their back end operations?
I'll let you go off that. Really good stuff, as always. Appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Brad.
Chris Cartman there with SunDevilSource.com. On the other side, so John Oliver weighed in on the Suns. This is not good when John Oliver decides to weigh in on the Suns. And there's a couple Suns things that Eric and I were kicking around before the show. We're just rolling our eyes on. What are you guys doing? We'll get to that after this timeout. Right, a couple other things before we get out of here. The Suns are now in a space where they are trying to tell us how great it is to have the number one pick. I saw a spot, a commercial last night in the NBA Finals that to me was insulting. It's, we've sucked for so long, but it's great we have the number one pick. I don't get it. I just don't understand where these people come up with ideas that are just really bad ideas. You need to just disappear. If you think that this is going to reinvigorate your season ticket sales, getting DeAndre Ayton, it's going to give you a bump. If you think this is automatically going to push you to the next level, this is where you break people's hearts and they just get more upset with you. You don't need to tell everybody this is great because it hasn't been great. It's as though you want to have people forget how bad you've been and how disregard you have, how much disregard you have for putting a product out on the court that is one to be proud of. You have a civic duty as a pro sports franchise to not put out crap, and you've put out crap. So please stop telling us how great this is going to be. Try being humble. Just try being humble. Amazing. Because this is what happens. You're on the radar now, guys. This was last night on HBO. Here's John Oliver. John Oliver crosses over lots of lines. This isn't Joe Sixpack Hardcore who's going to recite every last stat that Jared Dudley's had for the last 5 years. There's only very few of those people. They fit the size of my finger. When John Oliver decides to hammer you, this is mass appeal. So here's John Oliver.
For instance, the family of a woman named Marie Long objected to her guardians taking her on a weirdly expensive outing.
Just look at what Sun Valley charged Marie to send her and their worker to a Phoenix Suns basketball game. Over $1,000 for research, phone calls, a limo. Sun Valley even charged Marie $228 to determine the effect of the game on her mood.
Exactly. They charged her $228 to figure out how a Phoenix Suns game affected her mood, which is absurd because I'll tell you that for free. It was a Phoenix Suns game. It made her sad. Try it yourself. Go to a game and see if it improves your mood to see Dragan Bender put up 4 points and 1.5 rebounds. Spoiler alert, it won't.
That is so great. As that came down last night, I had a bunch of people that sent it over to me. And of course, you know, because it's the NBA, they put Devin Booker on Jimmy Kimmel Live, and I heard that segment was just dreadful. No offense to Devin, but just wasn't good. And it's, you have to accept this is where you've been. Just disappear. And start with Robert. Robert, you need to step up to the podium and say, I'm sorry for everything that's gone on. We hope that we've got it right. And we're not going to go away. I've been talking to my friends and have been in the Valley here for 20 plus years in the industry. And to think that all of a sudden there's some media outlets that are going to be all, everything's great, everything's this. That's not going to happen with guys like Jude and Bruce and Coop and myself. It's just not. It's unacceptable. We've become butt of jokes here in Phoenix. It should never have happened. And on that end, Brian Colangelo's story is sitting out there. And I saw this happen. Last week, saw the story come out. I was off. And, you know, leaking proprietary information, ripping on players and coaches. Brian and I had our ups and downs when he was here. If this were Danny Ainge, if this were Phil Jackson, if this were Jerry West, there would not be that big of an uproar about this, in my humble opinion. Brian has not hit home runs on every stretch with Philadelphia. If you think taking Markelle Fultz over Jason Tatum is hitting a home run, then you're simply being somebody who's in the camp of you can do no wrong. Signing Tom Gugliotta was a bad move by the Suns. I said it. He wasn't happy about it. We had a falling out. It happens. You work back through it. I don't wish any ill will on Brian. I happen to like Brian. Last time we saw each other at the GCU game, everything was fine. But the criticism that is going to come with this, part of the easy out is what exactly has gone right in Philadelphia. Now, you're going to say, well, they went to the postseason. What more do you want? I would say, what did they get for Nerlens Noel, and what did they get for Jahlil Okafor? And the answer is going to be not much. So there's going to be the convenience side of this, I do believe. I've already had a number of people have said, well, would you take Brian back here? Brian's not going to come work for Robert Sarver. Let's not kid ourselves. If David Griffin would come back today, I would say, please, and move Ryan over to scouting and call it a day. Not that hard to do. Not going to happen with this guy. That's our show for today. Thanks for being with us. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. As always, Eric Sorensen, the great producer there. Enjoy your Monday.